First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. I promised that I'd have him on every few months because he's that good. Maybe he'll become the Terry Garr or who else was? Chris Connolly. Who else was the other Letterman?
Kathy Lee Gifford.
Kathy Lee Gifford.
And Regis.
Richard Lewis.
And Calvin Trillin on the old 90-minute Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Well, welcome back to the BS Report.
Thanks for having me.
I had to have you on because I was thinking about you on Sunday night during the 25th MTV Video Awards.
That's right.
And
I was there for the first one, I remember.
Yeah, and
I only in the audience, not as an employee.
Well, I don't remember if we talked about this last time, but the first one, yeah, I think I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And 1984, yeah, I was 14. So Madonna comes out in the wedding dress and sings
right.
Like a Virgin and rolls around. And I think I went through puberty during the performance. But then I found out years later.
A lot of people had with Taylor Hansen before they realized he was a boy.
The story I heard like 10 years later, which I actually got confirmed by somebody who was sitting in the first couple rows, was that she had no underwear on.
Well, you know, underwear was an optional thing back in those days for Lady M. I was way in the back and so could not see. Give you an idea how long ago it was. I think the hosts were Dan Aykroyd and Bette Midler, right?
Dan Aykroyd?
And Bette Midler, I think, were the hosts of the first VMAs.
I don't remember that.
Of course you don't remember it. You were fixated on the wedding dress.
I remember Madonna, and I have a vague memory of Michael Jackson being involved somehow, but can't remember how.
Doesn't that say everything? You know, I interviewed Michael Jackson like a week and a half ago. I talked to him on the phone for 15 minutes.
Oh, I was going to say, you didn't see him in person, did you?
No, but it was his 50th birthday. And
I know.
Good Morning America, like, got him to chat about his 50th birthday. So, you know, there could not have been a more surreal moment than talking to Michael Jackson on the telephone.
How are his spirits?
His spirits seemed excellent, you know. I asked him what he was doing for his birthday, and he said he was going to have some cake with his kids and watch some cartoons.
I was going to make the Chuck E. Cheese joke there, but I held off.
I'm sure you were going there.
You know what's funny about the 50th birthday was I saw somewhere online somebody had the 50 faces of Michael Jackson photo montage where you start with when he was little and he had the
sure.
big nose and the afro, and then you just click and he just starts to get weird by about picture number like 18.
Right, and then
really weird. And then shockingly weird. And then he turns into an alien. And then his nose disappears. And it looks like he's the HBO autopsy skeleton. And by the end of it, it's just your head spinning.
Right.
You could say...
He looks like the singing nun by the time it's all over. I understand, yeah.
But you could say that his face has transformed more from plastic surgery than any human being ever.
That's possible. You know, there's Jocelyn Wildenstein to consider.
And
then there's your upcoming Academy Award winner for best actor, Mickey Rourke.
He's up there. But he kind of still sort of looks like Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, he looks like Mickey Rourke in Sin City, right? He looks like Mickey Rourke where there's been like, you know, there's been an eruption beneath the core and a new island is being created somewhere. I mean, the weird thing is even on the cover of Thriller, you know, that's the guy we recognize, you know, although he's strikingly different from the guy on the cover of Off the Wall, you know.
Yeah.
And by then you're already talking about him as an adult, so it's quite something.
I'm going to say that the Off the Wall Michael Jackson was actually like a relatively handsome guy.
He was. Well, he had the tuxedo on and he could move like that, and he had the falsetto in full effect. I mean, you know, if you want to talk raw talent, you know, you're talking about the Daryl Strawberry of music right there.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about a guy with all the tools, you know, and the best swing around. So.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the things I want to talk to you about. I don't remember if we talked about this last time, so forgive me if we talked about it.
I will, yes.
The whole thing about can you become famous too soon and can it just damage you irrevocably?
Well, you know, the guy who had the best line about this was George Clooney, who was asked in a Q&A that my daughter really enjoyed about Ocean's 13. The questioner said, Matt Damon says that you stop growing, you know, you stop maturing at the age you become famous. And George gave a four-word answer. He said, that's right, Matt did.
Well, but Damon, Affleck, and Clooney are three examples of guys who have turned out relatively okay.
Yes, I'd say
so. And all those guys struggled to get where they were, whereas, like, you know, one guy who became famous early, and it seems like he's normal or relatively normal, is DiCaprio.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, he likes models. He likes sports. He likes hip hop. That puts it in common with a lot of us, right?
He does his own thing, and I don't think you wouldn't describe him as weird. And I don't think Mark Wahlberg, same thing. I think he seems relatively normal, but.
Those are both guys who kind of, in an interesting way, abjured their past, in a way,
Right.
I mean, DiCaprio was on Growing Pains, He took all those pictures for Teen Beat and stuff like that, but he, he didn't just walk away from that. He, like, forswore it. Same thing with the success he had with Titanic, and Mark Wahlberg obviously did very much that with his, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch and his whole past. So it's possible that not building on your past but really turning away from it makes you saner in a way. But we all know the exceptions are few, and the people who have trouble who became famous at an early age are legion, For every Leonardo DiCaprio, or I would argue, say, Brooke Shields, somebody like that, there are a whole host of people who just don't seem to make it out in one piece.
Because it's not really, other than the money and being able to get into whatever restaurant or club you want, it's not really that fun to be famous.
It doesn't seem that way, at least at that age. It fractures your relationship with your family, There's all this money involved, I mean, we were talking about the VMAs before. This is the 10th anniversary of that 9999 VMA show at the Metropolitan Opera, which I always think of as the big pop coming out party, and that was Britney, and that was NSYNC, and that was the Backstreet Boys, and that was all those guys on the VMA stage for the first time. And Lauryn Hill sang on that show, too. She sang that song, Everything is Everything, and she...
Yeah.
And at the Metropolitan Opera, they have these super titles where the lyrics actually come up on the little mini screens in front of you, because when they sing opera, they do translations that way. And so I'm watching the rehearsal, and I'm watching the lyrics of those songs come up, and she's going, I wrote these words for everyone who struggles in their youth. And you just think, wow, these guys are going to have a tough road for the next 10 years. Who would have dreamed that Lauryn Hill would have had the toughest road of all of them in some respects? But
you're not going with Britney there?
Pardon me, Britney was there?
No, I'm saying, you're not going with Britney for toughest road.
Do you think Lauryn Hill gets the silver?
I think she gets the silver, yeah.
Yeah. Gets touched out by Jason Lezak at the end?
I think shaving your head and then wearing somebody else's bathing suit at the pool at La Mertage. And
did you come up with the bathing suit thing on your own, or is that something that an important woman in your life gave you? Because that doesn't seem like something a guy would instantly, lock onto.
You know what?
The shaved head thing, yes. The wearing the bathing suit, not so much.
I'm going to have to say my wife was really like, that was the most appalled I think I've ever seen her, where like a sex tape was involved with the Britney meeting these girls and then just randomly using their bathing suit like 4 hours later. She just thought that was the most disgusting thing that Britney ever could have done.
See, is that interesting? Like a guy would never have thought of that. Like, I mean, not like we're crazy, short swapping guys or anything like that, but that's the kind of thing we need the women in our lives to guide us on. Yeah.
You know what's interesting about your 999 thing? 9999?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You could say that was the birth of the slut era. That's
the
when everything
era?
Started, right? That's when, you talk about Magic getting HIV November 91, and then we struggle through the 90s with girls wearing baggy sweaters and nobody's hooking up and condoms, and then... Mm-hmm. All the people who were in that MTV Awards kind of knocked the door down. They're like, hey, listen, it's okay to act kind of slutty and not wear underwear. And
yes, I think
do
that's
that whole
true.
Thing.
I mean, you mentioned Madonna before in the 80s. She had a little something to do with that, but there had been kind of a fallow period for a while. Yes, I think seeing these people, seeing all the young people we talked about cross over from being child stars to being, legally desirable individuals, Britney, Christina, Justin Timberlake, you know, that sexualization in progress kind of opened the door for a whole lot of stuff that we've seen since.
Yeah, Madonna was way ahead of her time. And in fact, there was a backlash with her in the early 90s after the Magic thing. I remember she put out that book. Everybody was repulsed by the book. Oh, my God.
Right.
She's trying to corrupt people. What is she, you know? And now I think she's a visionary.
Well, she fought, I mean, I always thought she won the war that seems to be still be fought in sports. You know, the idea that, like, you could be undeniably intelligent and undeniably great-looking at the same time, or highly sexualized, let's put it that way. Mm. And the last bastion of American culture where people still seem to have this problem is sports, you know, where you can be one or the other, or it hurts your credibility if you're one or the other. And, you know, I thought Madonna had won that battle. I thought Madonna had proved that obviously you could be both, but it still kind of lingers around the fringes of our little industry here.
I think she's underrated.
I'll tell you one thing. You know, here's one way in which Britney was following Madonna's footsteps. I kept hearing until the VMAs that Britney was going around town speaking in a British accent.
No.
Really? Seriously, British accent. Just like Madonna did when, you know.
And Patrick.
Right before she started dating Guy Ritchie. But, you know, I don't know. I guess it, whether you're from Michigan or whether you're from Kentwood, Louisiana, there's something about that British accent that just makes you feel more comfortable.
See, Britney's in that Mike Tyson zone that I always talk about, where you could tell me any Britney story and I'd believe it.
You know, Tyson has the best line about the Jonas Brothers. You know, Tyson's line is the line that's most applicable to the Jonas Brothers and Miley Cyrus and stuff like that. It's the line that Michael Strahan quoted after the Super Bowl. You know, it's like everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
And that's what I always think of when I see the purity rings and I'm going to be good and stuff. It's like, let me know how you do once the hurricane of passion sweeps into your life. If you can make it through that, then talk to me.
Madonna had two interesting things about her career the first one was just the way she used sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember another female singer doing it to that degree.
Well, certainly in any way that you felt like somebody was making her do it. You know, you knew it was on her dime. You knew she was doing it. You knew it was her call. Nobody was manipulating her. You know, there was no John Derek in the background.
Yeah.
You know, so it was all on her, and that made it powerful and maybe a little scary for people.
Madonna was so sexual that I actually consider her to be one of my sexual partners.
Well,
from the past. That's
well,
how sexual
God, you know,
she was.
God knows she talks about you that way sometimes.
And then the other thing I thought that she doesn't get enough credit for was, you know, the way she would intentionally reinvent herself every few months or every year, every 2 years. And I think she was the first one who ever did that. She just always found ways to keep herself interesting.
Well, the aging rock critic on the other end of the phone here would probably say someone like David Bowie had done it first, you know.
But for that long, though?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there was the, you know, the Lad Insane and the Thin White Duke and all that stuff, but...
You're probably right.
Madonna did it on a much broader scale, you know, and within the context of a powerful woman, you know, within the context of someone who didn't take any guff and gave it back to you and all the rest of it. So
she's the first woman who did it.
Yeah, and kept it fresh that way, you know, kept her persona out there and fresh and interesting, you know. It seemed like every time there was a Vanity Fair cover or a new album or something, there was a new look to talk about, a new thing to do, and that kept the buzz high.
And then she somehow had these disciples who were emulating her, like obviously Rodman's the most famous one, but I always thought U2 kind of stole a page from her.
You thought U2 stole a page from Madonna?
Yeah, I do. I think some of their choices they made in the 90s were deliberately weird choices to kind of throw people off the scent a little bit.
I think, I think the thing about U2 was that they weren't a British band and they weren't an American band, you know. They thought they were a European band. And I think the choices they made in the, you know, in that era had a lot to do with their concept of themselves as being different from, you know, those two groups. I always thought U2 was one of the first bands that ever became really successful that never had to play a Chuck Berry song.
But they did play B.B. King.
Yeah, well, there you go. Eventually you come around, right?
Hey, wait, I forgot to mention something when you were talking about DiCaprio.
Sure.
So, yeah, I was a big Growing Pains fan, I'm not going to lie.
So I wouldn't ask you to.
And right when the show was kind of jumping off the cliff, I was still enjoying it because of Ben had a friend named Boner, and it just always, I loved the fact that the guy's name was Boner, and it just killed me. And then the daughter was losing like all kinds of crazy weight, and they were hiding her in these sweaters, and Kirk Cameron was going off the deep end, and it was still a compelling show to me.
So we thought Kirk Cameron was like the next Michael J. Fox.
You know, he was. Hey,
he was going to cross over, and like,
we didn't think he was.
Like
he was
Back to the Future and stuff.
It was there. It was sitting for him. He made that stupid debate movie, and that was it. The wheels came off, and then he got super religious.
I worked in a magazine where we got him to pose with a gigantic snake. Think he'd do that again these days?
Well, he could be another example of getting famous too young and going off the deep end, because now he's doing, like, religious infomercials.
He's very profound. That. Well, you know, it pushes you in one direction or another. You know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, so Leo comes in the last season.
Right.
And I swear to God this happened. I swear on my daughter's life. So there's an episode, and I don't remember the exact details, but I think Leo's dad had left the family a few years before or whatever, but now he was back.
Right.
And Leo had to reconcile whatever with his dad.
Okay.
He was unbelievable in this episode. And, like, to see somebody who's, like, really, a brilliant actor who's a 14-year-old on Growing Pains, like, on this show with Alan Thicke and Boner Stabone, and, you know, it was, like, one of the most compelling, bizarre TV experiences that I've ever had. It was like, what is this? Where did...
Wow.
You're just stuttering and stammering, watching this kid, like, he's crying, he's finally he hugs, I forget if he hugged Kirk Cameron or Alan Thicke, he's hugging him, and I knew. I was like, this kid is going to be one of the most famous actors ever. I knew it. And then This Boy's Life came out with De Niro. Yep. He killed in that. But it was just this weird, random sitcom moment. And I don't remember. The only other thing I think can compare to that was when, in Family Ties, Tom Hanks played the alcoholic brother.
Very good. Right. That's
two-parter.
Right. That's absolutely right. That's
two-parter.
Right.
Very special two-parter.
The uncle, right? The drunk uncle? Is that right?
And this was, he was still bosom buddies, Tom Hanks. We're not totally taking him seriously. And then he just hit it out of the park as the alcoholic uncle.
Isn't it weird that, like, some little random moment can, you know, catch the right guy's attention? Or, you know, you have to take full advantage. You know, when you get a shot like that, you've got to take it. Because if you do it right, even if the venue is ridiculous, people will notice. And there's no doubt that DiCaprio was a hot property, you know, right from the moment they cast him in This Boy's Life. Like, people all of a sudden said, he's the guy, this is the guy, you know.
Right. Well, I saw one of the most intriguing what-ifs of all time in movies is DiCaprio had a choice between Boogie Nights and Titanic.
Right.
And chose Titanic after seriously considering Boogie Nights, and now says afterwards...
Oh, no doubt he would rather have done Boogie Nights, right?
It kills him. It's like the biggest regret of his career.
Right.
So then you start thinking... Well, Boogie Nights, probably one of my 10 favorite movies of all time, definitely in my top two or three from the last 12 years.
Yep.
Is it better or worse with DiCaprio? I think it's probably better, right?
No, because I think Wahlberg was really good in that. I think Wahlberg has an unalloyed maleness that at the time DiCaprio did not. DiCaprio was still very young. He was reedy. He was perfect for that Titanic audience because he was not quite that threatening. Switch the two and you see, like, you know, one is more male than the other. One is a lot more male than the other. And at that period in their career, one works better. You know, they're the right colors for the things they did.
So you're saying it was more realistic to you, Mark Wahlberg with the giant package.
Yes, I'd say
so. He's got
the
kind of sexuality you were looking for from DiCaprio.
I would think it would be at that age, it would have been an aspirational role for DiCaprio. You know,
wow.
He would be the kind of guy he wanted to be and eventually became. But on the other hand, doing Titanic, whatever he felt about the experience, that lets him help Marty Scorsese get the Oscar. You know, that gives him, that writes the check that lets him do the movies he wants to do for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
That lets him dictate the rest of his career. And so he did the right thing, I think, whether or not he thinks he did or not.
I thought it was interesting. He's doing this movie with Kate Winslet.
Yes.
And Kate Winslet says that Leo DiCaprio is her best friend, but her husband directed the movie. And she has, like, love scenes with Leo and her husband's directing.
You know.
And she's like, it's so weird. It's my husband and my best friend. And how does Leo DiCaprio become Kate Winslet's best friend? I don't care how great the Titanic filming was. What are they, do these two, like, are they in a fantasy league together? Like, what goes on with these two?
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, and we come up with it all the time. I was thinking about it with Vince Young today, you know.
Mm.
There are some people who you go through this extraordinary experience with, and there are two people in the world who understand how you feel. There are only like two or three people who can appreciate how crazy an experience you've been through. And you must want to hang on to those guys for your entire life, you know?
Mm.
For me,
it's Rick Riley.
You know, I understand that it is.
Yeah.
For you, for Rick Riley. But, you know, that whole weird thing with Vince Young today or yesterday, you know,
yeah.
Where they sent the police out to see if he was all right and stuff.
Yeah.
That just, I mean, whatever the situation is, that just tells you that the coaching staff of the Titans has no idea who Vince Young really is. Like, they just don't know a thing about him, really.
I'm gonna say we're not gonna top that for weirdest sports story of the year.
Well, you know, we had the guy taking the other guy's luggage. That was pretty good. But
yeah,
no,
but I could have believed that. I would have believed that
okay.
Tatum Bell would take Rudy Johnson's luggage if he did it or not. But
mm-hmm.
Vince Young leaving his house at 7 o'clock on a Monday night and his family becoming so concerned that they immediately call the Nashville police, like, how crazy could he have possibly been as he was walking out of the house?
I don't know if the family called the police. I think it was the Titans that called the police, right? I mean, all
No. The family alerted the Titans that they were like, hey, this is bad. We got to find this
Interesting.
Guy.
Okay. Well, I looked at that coaching staff on the Titans and I said, who would understand what's going on in Vince Young's mind? Like, who on that staff has ever had an experience anything like the experience Vince Young had? And with the possible exception of Ernest Biner, you know, who must have gone through, some tough times, obviously, with the fumble. Like, who could possibly relate to what that guy's life is like, you know? Who could tell him, like, how to get through this period where you've been so idolized, so revered, and now things go bad for you, you know?
You know what I'm smelling?
Is?
I'm smelling a Chris Connolly feature on Vince Young in about 6 months. Your wheels are already turning. I could feel it.
They're very busy people, the NFL guys, you know?
Right? Maybe a month before the ESPYs.
I like doing happy, perky stories. Come on.
When Vince is trying to prove to everybody that he's really not crazy, and you have to sit down with him, and he breaks down. And
I'm sure he's just had a tough time. I'm sure, you know, it must be, you know, it must be really, isn't it strange that his psychodrama could top, from a story standpoint, Tom Brady's, you know, just because there's, you know, you know that Tom Brady is mentally tough in a way, but you also sense like if he's having a problem, do they have the people who can get him the help that he needs, Vince, you know?
Well, it seems like a huge thing for these guys is the support group, how big it is, how many people they trust. Like, Brady's an interesting guy because his support group is really like three or four people plus his sisters and his parents, and that's it. And he doesn't let anybody else in. Like, it's closed.
Okay.
And I think
that's for sure.
Well, I think that's the right way to do it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think a lot of these guys, I think they become famous, especially if they come from lower class backgrounds and they have a lot of extended family members. And, you know, suddenly this guy becomes a meal ticket for a lot of people. They sign a contract, all of a sudden it's like, hey, can I have 10 grand to open a diner? Can I have 15 grand to open a travel
And if you're
agency?
Batman, you know, all of a sudden your mom goes to the police and swears out a complaint against you.
Yeah. Well, he's another
At least that
right
didn't
there.
Happen to him, right? At least they asked the cops to find him rather than ask the cops to arrest him for not loaning him like $100,000 like the Christian
right.
Bale story allegedly went.
Child actor.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
And then you have with the child actors, you can have the comeback child actor, like Christian Slater.
Right.
His booze and all his problems are behind him. He's ready to lead an NBC show and be a spy.
Haven't
He's
they
got a nice haircut?
Showrunner on that show like once? I mean, haven't they changed the showrunner on that show a couple of times? I feel like I only saw the promo like 90 or 100 times during the Olympics.
What is the best NBC rumor you've heard in the past 6 weeks?
Well, I'm excited that NBC's back on iTunes. That's the big announcement today. NBC's back on iTunes.
Hmm.
So this means, you know, this means it's much easier to get The Office and 30 Rock on your iPod, you know, for those long cross-country flights. So I'm jacked about that.
I understand a lot of things, and I know electronics and technology is changing, but I don't think I'll ever be at the point where I want to watch 30 Rock or a show like that on my one-inch iPod.
You sure?
Yeah,
we're not talking like Terrence Malick, you know. We're not talking like sweeping wistful vistas here.
I just think
that
it's hard to see.
We're talking about like nice old sitcoms shot in 4:3, you know.
Is it because we're old though? Like I just have trouble seeing. I can't see the screen.
The lines are still funny. Pretend like it's radio and you're listening to Fibber McGee or something.
Oh, that's good. Like I get the whole podcast thing. Like if I'm traveling, I would totally want to hear a conversation as lively and as exciting as this one.
No doubt.
If I was sitting in, you know, row 13 in the middle seat between a screaming baby and somebody else. But 30 Rock, I don't really, that one I don't understand the whole sitcom thing.
You don't understand sitcoms in general?
There's a lot I don't understand. I don't understand this Facebook thing. Like, I'm on Facebook now, but my settings
You're on Facebook? Really?
Yeah, my settings are private. Like, it's only like, I have like 20 friends. It's all people I know, but I have a couple friends who have like 530 friends.
Yes.
It's like, why do you have 530 Facebook friends?
A friend of mine put it best when she went on Facebook. She said, "It's one big popularity contest, and I'm going to win."
You might have to get a Facebook, Connelly, because nobody knows like a more eclectic group of people probably.
Why would you want them to talk to each other? It's like you have high school friends, you have college friends, you have the first place you worked friends, the second place you worked friends. Who would want them in a room together?
Well,
like,
isn't
that your nightmare? It's like you didn't know him in high school, but he wasn't anything like what you think he was.
Right.
My gosh, that's everybody's terror, right?
Did you hear about Bill's DUI in college?
Yeah,
what?
Exactly.
I didn't have a DUI, but
it's like, really? You know,
yeah,
you have to figure, can I put this picture up? Or can I, you know, wow, frightens me.
I like the choices of pictures fascinate me with Facebook.
Oh,
I don't know
yeah.
how much you've delved into it, but I went with, I have a picture of me and my daughter.
That's nice.
Just because I love my daughter and I like to pimp her as much as I can.
Sure.
But, and some other people have like pictures of just their kids, but they're not in it.
Right.
Which I think is interesting. It's like basically my life is my kids. I'm
right.
not even worthy to be in this picture. That's how little I mean compared to my kids.
Okay.
Or you have the one where it's kind of like a pose shot where they look nice.
Right.
And those people are almost always single, by the way.
Well, then, I was going to say, yeah, you want to look maximally attractive, yeah.
Or then you have, like, my buddy Jack O.
Okay.
Who has a picture of him and his fiance dressed up. And I thought that was bold. It's kind of like...
Was that his idea or was his fiance's idea?
He said that he really liked the picture of himself, which I thought was funny.
Okay.
Apparently, he wasn't aware that he could have photoshopped and just made it himself. But anyway, I just love seeing
that. That
would
have been a fun conversation. Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like maybe you wouldn't want to be on my page. I don't know.
But then you see like people like my cousin Kristen,
right?
Who is just graduated from college, and it seems like that whole generation, it's always like a picture of one girl with like three or four friends.
Right. Right.
And they're all kind of drunk, and that's the Facebook
picture.
They're
also doing obscure finger signs to the camera, or
right.
There's a TGIF in the background or something like that.
And then they have these status updates, which the New York Times did a great feature on, about, you know, it'll be like, Bill Simmons is depressed about Tom Brady. Like, that's my status. But then my status is now updated in everybody else's Facebook thing.
Right. Everybody who's your friend now reads Bill Simmons is upset about Tom Brady.
But how far do I go with the status? Like, I stubbed my toe yesterday and I can barely walk today. Like, Bill Simmons stubbed his toe, isn't happy? Like, do I put that in?
There's a humor piece on McSweeney's right now, McSweeney's.net, that's called, Hamlet by William Shakespeare as done as a series of Facebook status updates. And it's very funny, I have to say. It's very funny.
I'm going to look that up. So you don't have a Facebook profile?
I don't, no. I'm not saying I won't ever, but I don't, no. But my kids do. My kids are constantly updating their Facebook pages.
Is that why you feel like your kids have claimed that territory? You don't
want to
go there?
My wife feels very strongly this way. My wife feels that Facebook is for our kids, you know, and that adults should let the kids have their little thing, you know, and not shoo in on that so much. That adults are shooing in on Facebook, and that means that kids will find another pure only for students thing like Facebook originally was. But I think eventually we may all have to be on Facebook. And it's a huge reporting tool, that's for sure. You can find out things about people and stuff that you wouldn't any other way, Facebook and MySpace pages.
So if you had, it sounds like you're going to give in soon.
I'm really stunned that you have one, I have to say. So that's rocking my uncertainty like an earthquake would.
I only did it for one reason, because my buddy Jim Grady from high school was on it and was swearing by it, because he said once you add the friends, you can see all the other friends that that friend has.
Uh-huh.
And for us, like, it was a way to just see what people looked like that we went to high school with.
Oh, okay.
You'd be like, whoa, look at that girl. Oh, my God. She looks great. Like, that's really it. That was my only appeal. And now, you know, it's just a way to kind of see what people look like 20 years later, 10 years later, whatever.
Okay.
But if you do Facebook, what would be your picture, you think?
Oh, I'm sure I'd go with, like, some high school picture. I'd probably do a picture of me with one of our dogs.
See, I was going to guess that. Like, you, like, kind of nuzzled over the dog with, like, a tennis ball or something.
Yeah, you know, because everybody likes dogs, even if they don't like what my mug looks like. So that would work out well, right?
Is the first friend you look for Jan Wenner?
I don't know if Jan's on Facebook. And I know what Jan looks like now. He looks fine. So it might be interesting to see the friends that Jan has, you know, although I think I could probably tell you who they were, you know.
I see your first
1986,
four,
but Michael
first
Douglas
be,
and Richard Gere and, yeah, all those guys.
No, you'll be Jan Wenner, Cameron Crowe,
mm-hmm.
Richard Gere, and then the Bills tight end who got paralyzed and walked again. I think those are your first four.
I'm sure we could throw a talented woman in there somewhere. You suppose Winona Ryder has a Facebook page?
That would be good. She probably stole her Facebook page from somebody else.
Now stop that.
Oh, come on.
Now stop that. Come on.
Come on. We can still make Winona Ryder
theme
jokes.
Come on. My wife says,
don't
forgive a woman anything.
I'm going to say that you would have the greatest Facebook page of all time, because you have music background, music friends. You have movie background, movie friends. You have sports background, sports friends. And then just weird, random LA people.
And again, there they all are together, like talking to each other.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, I'm sweating just thinking about it right now.
Just think, though, it could lead to Cameron Crowe potentially messaging Kevin Everett and asking him how he's doing.
That would be a nice thing. That would be a nice thing. It's, you know, that'd be a cool thing, I think.
Do you think you could get Cameron Crowe on my podcast?
I can't see why not. I actually sat next to him at the world premiere of The House Bunny.
And what did he think?
He seemed to like it. I saw him congratulating Emma Stone afterwards, who is very charming and looks to have an interesting career ahead of her, I'd say.
My whole thing with Cameron Crowe is this. I think I'm Almost Famous is the best movie of the past 10 years, and it bombed. And it drives me crazy that nobody saw it. And
it won an Academy Award for Best Screenplay, didn't it?
Yeah, but it was like...
It's probably talked to me. I mean, probably people bring it up with me more than any movie...
Well, I think it's become that's my whole point. It did terrible in the box office, gained a little momentum back with the Oscar, and then the DVD was one of the best DVDs ever made. And now I think it's one of those movies that's on all the time. It seems like it's become this huge cult film.
Yeah.
And also one of the most personal stories anybody's done. Like, it's really about his life to the point that, you know, his obsession with getting all the details right and making sure the hotels look the same and...
Yeah,
like, you know, it's insane how detailed it is, and I would always want to know, like, obviously that's the best movie that he thinks he'll ever make.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm sure, you know.
What I want to know. Does he think, like, this is his story, basically? Is he going to top that? Where do you go from there? Does he feel good that you know, now 10 years later, 8 years later, that people now kind of see the brilliance of that movie, or like, how does he feel?
Well, those would all be good questions to ask, I think, you know. I always think that people underrate what a really good movie Jerry Maguire is.
It was so successful
because it, like, had so many lines that entered the culture, that kind of thing. That's a really good movie.
Great movie. And what scares me, though, is that they don't make movies like that anymore.
In what respect would you say that?
They don't make complicated, really nuanced, great character movies that are a little bit big budget.
Yeah, that's right.
But also are really entertaining and rewatchable, and you could watch it and watch it again 6 months later. I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, the last 5 years, like, is there even a movie like that?
Doesn't it feel to you that that kind of movie now can be found on cable television? Don't you feel now that movies are essentially constructed, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, like theme park rides? Like, the money is so great. You know, you take something like The Dark Knight or some of the things we saw this summer. They're so big. They're so gigantic. It's hard to talk about them afterwards. They're just gigantic.
Yeah.
But that kind of nuanced character study has migrated, but entertaining and fun, has migrated to TV, where the writer gets to be in charge.
Yeah.
You know, where they give them the time, The Sopranos, Mad Men, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it's funny you brought this up, because I just watched Jerry Maguire like 10 days ago. I hadn't seen it in a while. And there's so many.
It's Tom Friend's best work, I'll tell you that much.
Tom, oh yeah, he was great.
Yeah, Tom's great.
Drew Bledsoe, I don't think he's ever been better.
Never been taller, that's for sure. Did he marry Rebecca Romijn? I can never remember.
It's Cruise's, probably Cruise's finest movie.
I think so. I mean,
like, it's the perfect
most,
Cruise
you know,
movie.
It's just terrific, yeah.
But it's got terrific. These little scenes in there that you just don't see in movies anymore. Like, he says goodbye to Renee Zellweger and Lipnicki in the car, and he's walking into the airport, and they watch him leave, and then they see this dad saying goodbye to his family, and they're just kind of watching it, and then they look at each other, but nothing's said.
Right.
And those are the kind of scenes we just don't see in movies anymore.
Right, because you're talking about a writer who, like, really sat in a room and thought, in this particular situation, how would these particular people deal with this particular emotion? You know, it doesn't seem like a lot to ask, you know, for a movie, but, like, what we know about that guy, Cameron, is that that's what he thinks about, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so satisfying to be in the audience and to watch a scene where you go, wow, that guy really thought about what this moment would be like.
Yeah.
Boy, you don't see that in movies much, huh?
And he also thinks about, you know, the musical choices and stuff. And
yeah.
You know, it's been 12 years, and we still haven't seen a better athlete, movie character, or TV character than Brad Tidwell.
No, no.
He's the bar that has been set, and nobody has come close to topping it. Like, just
now, would
a
you
great
have watched
character.
Would you have watched the sitcom about the Tidwells?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting, huh?
So. Absolutely. I love the loser brother. I like the girlfriend, or the wife,
good,
I mean.
Good combination. No, we just love those guys, right? And who, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr., he certainly hit his ceiling there, it seems like, so.
and that was in the basement.
Well, you know, there's always a chance for redemption. That's a great thing.
It just goes to show you, though, how much luck is involved with movies, because there's probably a few people who could have played that part. I don't know if it'd be exactly as good as Cuba Gooding was.
He was really good, though.
He was really good.
Oh, my God, he was so good, yeah.
But I'm not saying he's the only one who could have pulled off Rod Tidwell, but he was there, and he got the part. And,
yeah, you know, he didn't leave anything on the table, that's for sure, though. I mean, like... You can't say, boy, Wesley Snipes would have been great in that, you know?
He was. No, Wesley Snipes would have been terrible. We can say that safely.
You forget. Wesley Snipes in the early 90s, like, he was poised, man. He was in, you know, the movie where he was in the, you know, wheelchair, you know?
You said, but so, you, the pivotal part of that was early 90s.
Okay, well, a lot of people look in the early 90s.
You gotta
my
give
Facebook
it up.
Picture probably would have indicated that, yeah.
Wesley carried an action movie, Passenger 57. Not a lot of black actors could say that.
No, and, you know, everyone had a catchphrase, right? Everyone had, I mean, he, like, nobody did catchphrases like him. My personal, that included somehow the title of the movie, or, you know,
yeah.
Like, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's an address that changes all the rules.
He had a lot of those Passenger
57. That was my personal favorite.
Yeah, that was a good one. I still hold a grudge against him, though, for how bad he was as a basketball player in Wet Men Can't Jump.
Oh, really? Oh,
he was awful. Oh, my God. I mean, the fact that Woody Harrelson wasn't just better than him, but, like, considerably embarrassingly better, ruined the movie for me. I can't go higher than a B- with that movie.
No, it's interesting. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember,
it's bad.
You know, I remember thinking it was lively and fresh, but...
The movie itself was good, but Wesley's basketball scenes with the high dribbles, and you could just tell he was terrible. He's like 5'2". Not buying it.
You know, my favorite scene like that is The Grasshopper, a film that brought together the unforgettable pairing of Jim Brown and Jacqueline Bisset.
Ooh.
I believe it's the film in which Jim Brown is taking it to the hoop, and then he gets shot to death.
Oh.
As he goes in for a layup. Watching the movie with my parents. So,
the most unrealistic basketball scene was Ed Norton's reverse two-hand slam in American History X.
No, Ed. No.
Just as long as we all remember that.
I don't have any problem with that.
What happened with Jackie Bisset?
What? She's gorgeous. What are you kidding? What has to happen with her?
I'm saying.
Still, and she still looks beautiful, you know?
I'm with you. Why wasn't she a bigger star?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I think that's a good question. Well, obviously she was treated as a, you know, a sex object, and she may have had some issues with that. I don't know.
Should have been a bigger star. I mean, she carried the deep basically because she swam in a white t-shirt and you could see
her
nipples.
Yes, she did. That's right. That's how they said. But I, you know, I think when they do that to you, they, or when you have to do that, that takes something out of you, you know. At least in that era, it took, it like felt like, I don't know. It may have just felt like she didn't want to have to do that so much anymore. So
I have a reason.
Go right ahead.
This is my personal theory.
Okay.
I think Class was such a bad movie, and it was so ridiculous that she would have gone after Andrew McCarthy that just the ramifications were felt throughout her career.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Remember that.
Was she also in Rich and Famous around that same time?
Might have
That's
been.
That's a movie with Hart Bochner.
And, Hart Bochner.
Hart Bochner plays a Rolling Stone reporter in which he says, I'm going on the road with Fleetwood Mac. I'm taking so-and-so as my assistant. It's in the budget. We all laughed at that.
I like when they have those Rolling Stone things where it's like, Almost Famous has that, where it's like some crazy room bill with they paid him $1,000 for the feature. Like, they didn't pay that much back then, did they?
No. No, they didn't.
I thought they had no money.
If it's on me, by the way, Fran McDormand goes back-to-back Best Actress in that movie.
Oh, did she even get nominated?
I don't remember if she got nominated, but that was – I thought that was even better than Fargo for her. I thought she was just tremendous in that, you know.
She was great. Billy Crudup, I think, has now established himself as the Vince Carter of Hollywood because clearly has more raw talent than almost anybody and just doesn't want it.
Hmm.
What do you think of that theory?
Doesn't want it. Okay.
Doesn't want it. He could easily.
They've touted him for a while. You know.
Yeah, but
in your mind, is that a more successful movie with a more famous actor in that part?
No, because it was almost Brad Pitt.
I remember hearing that. Yes.
No, I think he nailed that part, and I thought he was amazing in the good Prefontaine movie, not the bad one.
Oh, okay. Jared Leto one, but the that one.
Not Jared Leto, Girl from Melrose Place with fat makeup on at the end, talking about her after. Not that.
Here's the hilarious thing. I saw one of those two movies. I cannot remember which one as we speak right now.
So you saw the Jared Leto then, because you would remember the Billy Crudup.
I saw one of them. I just can't quite remember which one I saw.
You would remember the Billy Crudup one. That was an excellent, excellent movie.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, and him
and
that.
Who played Bill Bowerman?
Donald Sutherland.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
That's pretty good. Well, as always, you know, I emailed you and I said I have no idea what we're going to talk about, and now we've filled 45 minutes.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. You know that.
You never disappoint. Anything you want to plug?
I have a piece coming up on 2020 on Wednesday night on privilege and the rich. But aside from that, I hope people just keep watching the worldwide leader in sports.
Oh, that was nice of you.
Thank you.
When is your stuff going to turn up on ESPN Classic?
I don't know. I think maybe it has to be. You know how they colorize those movies, like, you know, from the past? I think they have to add, like, all that kind of sepia, like golden light on all the things. So once the Turner Company or whoever has those, once they do all that, then I'm sure I'll run on Classic. Also, maybe if I can be worked into some episodes of Arliss.
Oh, that would be, like, digitally thrown in there?
Yeah, exactly. You know, just like jolt it in every now and then.
See, I think the question is, why weren't you in Arliss? Everybody else was.
I was still covering Brittany and Justin back then. You know, I wasn't.
Arliss was the entourage before, like just the random cameos that you didn't understand why the, like Ben Silverman in Entourage last week. Why?
Right. Exactly.
Why is he in?
You know, it's just like. You know, sometimes they come by the thing like, what are we going to do? You know?
Yeah.
You know? Have you ever been to a concert where a guy thought he was called up on stage to jam and actually hadn't been? It's an awkward moment.
Yeah. You also described every hip-hop concert ever. all right. Well, we'll talk to you in a couple months. And,
look forward to it. Best of luck to your grand enterprise there.
Thank you, and see you on Facebook.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Target to set off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.